stations promise outstanding content, but when it's time to deliver, they fall flat on their ridiculous faces. Enter LA Talk Radio, a cool, irreverent, and entertaining talk station that delivers totally original content without any commercials. Log on to latalkradio.com and get involved with the best talk radio station on the internet. LA Talk Radio, we say what we want.
The morning show that's on your side. But then again, so is appendicitis.
Get ready for the most popular morning show anywhere on the internet. You're listening to Sam in the Morning with Mia, right here on LA Talk Radio. If you'd like to take part in the show today, give us a call at 323-203-0815. And now your program hosts, Sam and Mia.
Good morning. Welcome to Wednesday, September 25th.
Happy hump day. There, I said it.
Good. Good. No conversation about it anymore, okay?
Nope. It just happened.
I think if I'm sick of it, people are sick of it too.
It's Wednesday.
That's okay. Yes, it's Wednesday and I'm happy to see you and that's what matters.
Yes,
you look
thank
all
you.
Bright and
I'm happy
and blue.
To see you too, Sam.
Thank you. Thank you. That makes my day. You're even matching your iPad case there
oh
with
my
your
gosh,
shirt.
I
did you
of
notice
am.
That?
Yeah, this like tealish vesty thing.
Teal vest thing and
yeah.
You have a teal iPad case.
I do.
So that's pretty cool. You're like totally matched
that?
And coordinated today.
I am.
Yeah.
What do you know? Well, hey, it's Wednesday.
It is
like
Wednesday.
Mostly Wednesdays. I seem to dress more colorful.
Oh, really? You noticed that?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's a possibility.
What is it? You follow the pictures on Facebook pretty much and remember
right?
that?
I know. Like I said, I always have to look back to see what I've worn already and what I can.
I know. I kept that in mind, and I started going through our pictures and said, you know what? She never wears the same thing twice.
That's right.
I haven't. Wow.
unless we have like phone call guests
right.
where you don't see me. Well, I mean, then those days I'm in PJs, but that's a whole nother story.
Yeah, there you go. So, yeah. So yesterday we didn't do a show. I got to tell you why, man. I was so irritated.
Yeah, you got to tell me why, man.
Yeah.
Mm. Bro, man.
Excuse me.
What
so
happened?
I was going to bed at 3:00 in the morning on Monday night,
uh-huh.
And it was. So I go to
what
wash
were you
my
doing?
Face.
Why? Why
I'm always up
in the
late.
Morning?
I told you I'm like working. You
okay.
know, I have so much work to do.
All right.
Because I fall asleep in the afternoon, so then I have to do the work at night.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And so at any rate, so I do that, and I'm about to wash my face. There's no hot water, and I said, great.
Aww.
That means in the morning there's not going to be any hot water. So
yeah.
Sure enough, I get up in the morning. I'm trying to shave. No hot water. I'm running like all the faucets in the house. Nothing. And I thought to myself, Mia, there's no way I'm leaving the house like this. You know, I mean, after a night of sleep, I sweat, I stink, I don't look good unshaved. I said, there's no way I'm leaving the house like this. There's
oh boy.
Just no way. So, bless you.
Thank you.
So,
oh, man,
I don't know. I won't comment about those anymore. I mean, you laugh at your own sneezes, which means something, right?
I do. I know it's so outrageous, and anybody that hasn't heard it's going to be like, what was that?
It's because you're trying to stifle it. Just let it come out.
I just squeak.
Yeah.
Okay.
So anyway, I mean, you know, call me spoiled, whatever, but, you mm-hmm. know, I mean... The thing is, we didn't have studio guests, so I said, what the hell, you know, I'm not coming in. I mean, actually, if we had studio guests, it would have been worse, you know, because, I mean, mm-hmm. can you imagine our guest today looking at me like unshowered and unshaved? That would have been bad.
So what, you have to shave your face every day?
I do, every day in the morning, yeah.
Before you come to work. Wow,
so check this out. So then I was supposed to come here at about 1:30 to open the door because there was no shows in the morning and we weren't here.
Uh-huh.
So at 10 till, my engineer calls me remotely, and she says, did you open the door for them? I'm like, shit, no.
Oh,
it's 10
man.
Minutes before the show's supposed to start. Thankfully, you know, I live here a mile from here.
Right, yeah.
So I jumped out of my PJs. I was still in my PJs at 1:30 because I couldn't take a shower.
Oh, wow. Wow.
Anyway.
So did you come here in your PJs too? So,
well, I jumped out of them, put some jeans on and some flip-flops, but I looked like hell. And I thought, You know, here people are seeing me. That's what I was trying to avoid. And people are here with their guests and everything. I just didn't feel comfortable.
So wait, then what's the deal? Did your hot water heater break or what?
Well, no, they were working. This occasionally happens there. They like work on a ruptured pipe or something, so they have to shut off the hot water.
Oh, man.
And then I don't know what the hell happened. But why at 3 o'clock in the morning? Only God knows. I don't know what the heck. But at any rate, today is better. And again, I had to run the faucets for a while, though, because after they work on it for a couple of days, the hot water doesn't arrive right away, so it doesn't get to your faucet right away. So you have to waste a lot of water, which I'm totally opposed to.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like very like anti-wasting water, you know?
Oh, for sure.
Yeah, like people that take 20-minute showers and stuff. That's too much, you know? I mean, if you try to fill the tub and you didn't let the water through, it'd probably get to your shoulders or something, you know? That's how much water we waste on showers, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Oh,
so
man. Well, I'll tell you what's even worse.
Yeah.
Is when you're in the shower all soaked up and then they turn your water off. Yeah.
Did that ever happen to you?
Uh-huh.
Really?
This one time, actually, I was sent home from work. I was so sick. I don't know if I had the flu or what. I felt like hell. And I was so sick. And they're like, wow, like, you look terrible. You got to go home.
Uh-huh.
And I'm like, okay, thank you so much. And they let me go home. And I'm thinking, all I want to do is just take a nice shower and go lay down forever and, you know, till I feel better. And sure enough, I'm in the shower. I'm like all soaked up, like shampoo, legit lathered in my hair, all, you know, soap all over my body, whatever. And all of a sudden, the water is it just kind of like trickles down and then it's gone. And I'm like,
and you still have soap on you.
And I'm like freezing and sick and like, oh my God, it was terrible. I'm like calling my landlord. I'm like, I don't feel well. I'm trying to take a shower. Why didn't you turn off the water? Oh my gosh. I was so incredibly sad.
Yeah.
It was awful.
I know.
And they were fixing something, but they need to give you a notice.
Yeah.
And you know what? They did that a few more times. A couple other times I'd get up and I had to go, you know, for like a photo shoot or something. Mm-hmm. And I didn't have any water.
Yeah.
And it was awful. So finally, like, I complained enough and I'm like, this is illegal. You have to put like a notice on our door that you're going to be shutting off the water.
Unless he can tell you it's an emergency and it happened right away. They didn't have time.
No,
to
but
tell
they actually
you.
Have like workers come with their truck
and
they're, you
and
know,
everything.
Working on stuff. So yeah, it's like, why, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. So that makes me really, really angry. But yeah, so let people know when you're turning off the water.
I know. I was angry too, but I didn't know who to get mad at, you know, because what are you going to do? You
know,
they work on it.
Yeah.
But,
no, I know.
But luckily this morning it worked out well.
I think what happened was...
Can you imagine me 2 days without the kitchen?
Oh,
no, I would have gone to a friend's house last night if it didn't happen.
Yeah. That would have been a fantastic idea, Sam. Thank you for taking us all into consideration with that.
There you go. So this morning I get up, I go on the patio, there's this huge black widow like suspended in midair in its web, you know.
Did you almost like walk through it?
No.
Oh,
no,
that had to have been like the worst. If you don't realize that, you walk right through a cobweb and a spider's on your nose. Like,
I know, and it's a big scary spider too.
A big scary spider, yeah. But see, they're not very big, right?
No.
Black widows are small, but they've got the red
on
their stomach, right? The little hourglass shape. And then you know you're in real big trouble.
I know. And so I didn't do anything. I just let it stay there, you know. I mean, what am I going to do? You know, you cut off the web, it's
going to
jump right on you, you know.
Make sure that, you know, it doesn't end up in your house or something.
I know. Well, I'll make sure, believe me.
Yeah, make sure he's still there when you get home.
I know. Hopefully
he'll
disappear.
Every morning and every night, check on him. Make sure he's still occupied with his own little home.
Yeah. I know. I took a Facebook picture of it.
Did you really?
Yeah, I'm starting to take pictures of everything.
Wait, can you see the red? I kind of want to see that.
No, because I didn't want to get too close. And then I had to zoom in on it. So it's kind of blurry, but I just got the gist of it, you know.
Yeah, no, that's true. I don't want to get too close to something like that, man.
No,
freaking way.
Yeah. Did you ever run into a live snake before? I mean, ever hiking or anything?
Yeah. I mean, not like a really scary snake. I mean, we used to get like little gardener snakes in the Midwest. But they weren't anything like threatening or scary. We try to like catch them and take them home as pets.
Oh, wow, wonderful.
Of course. Of course.
I have such fear of snakes.
I love
Luckily,
snakes.
I've never seen. Really?
I love them.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, I've got those couple pictures on Instagram of me holding snakes.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, they're so cute. His little tongue was sticking out and kissing my face. Like, oh, my little God. Snake baby.
Okay, enough of that.
Adorable.
Enough of that. I don't want to hear about it. Snake my butt.
I have found your weakness, Sam.
Yes, you did. Yes, you did.
I have found your fears. Dun, dun, dun. Well, actually, on a really happy note, I would just like to say my mom comes in town tonight.
Oh, really? Is that like a surprise or something?
No. I'm just excited to have her in town.
Oh, wow. Wonderful.
Her birthday, she won't be here for her birthday, but her birthday is October 2nd.
Okay.
But she'll be here till the 1st, so I'll get to like celebrate
over the
weekend.
We'll bring her on
the
show then.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe I'll have her.
For sure.
I'll have her pop in for a minute. But yeah, she'll get in late tonight and
that's
be here
cool.
over the weekend. And yeah, I'm excited.
Awesome. Mommies are always cool.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we have a couple of very special guests in the studio that we're going to bring in now. And we have Michael Bayuth and Kim Klein. Okay, I should look at my notes. That's what I should do. Welcome to the show, guys.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Of
Great
course.
To be here.
Yes, we always have to keep up on all the names, and so sometimes I forget, you know, but that's okay. Sometimes I'm just like a little forgetful in the morning, right? Mia knows that.
Mm-hmm. Well, hey, at least you didn't forget to,
shower. Take a shower.
And
there you go.
Wow. Thank you for that, Sam.
Yeah.
Anyway,
back to
our
guests. Good morning, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
Of course.
Kim and I have both showered, so we're prepared for the
I know,
show.
We're not smelling anything, so we know we're good.
That's a plus.
This morning,
always a positive.
So you contacted me over the weekend, actually,
and
it sounded pretty interesting, so I invited you to the show. And so you guys are a writing team, is that?
We are.
What you guys do together, pretty much?
Yes.
That's why you're together on the show today.
Absolutely.
Right.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Because you work together and you collaborate.
Yes.
Okay. And we live together.
Oh, so you live together too.
That, there's that going on too.
So there's more going on.
How about that?
I was
going
to get to that, but I wasn't sure. I don't want to put you on the spot.
More beneath the surface.
Yeah. There you go. Awesome. So a live together team. Writing team.
Right.
And so you guys wrote a book, and we'll get to the book in a moment. You guys live here in Southern California, right? In LA area.
Yep.
So, because sometimes we have people that are not from here and stuff. Michael, are you originally from LA?
I am. I've lived in the San Fernando Valley my whole life.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow, how cool is that?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, not many people are from here, right?
No.
We always say that, yeah.
Yeah.
And you, Kim, are you originally from here?
No, I'm not. But I've lived all over.
Really? Where were you born? Where did you grow up?
I was born in Sacramento.
Oh, really? Northern California.
And I love Northern California. I love the Bay Area.
Uh-huh.
I lived in Napa
for
21 years.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Bay Area.
Mm-hmm.
That's beautiful there.
Yeah, it is.
Mia, have you ever been up there? Up north to San Francisco?
Actually, I have. I mean, it's been a long time, but I think it was actually my first trip to California. I was like 9 years old, and we did a family vacation, but we actually started, we like rented a car. We started in San Francisco and road tripped it all the way down to Los Angeles.
That's nice. That's cool.
It was a great time. But, you know, I think I'm definitely due for a trip. I feel like since I've lived here, I should probably... broaden my horizons a little bit and get out of LA and see more of
everybody
California.
Loves San Francisco. You know, everybody I talk to, including myself, you know.
I remember being at the Fisherman's Wharf.
Yeah.
That was like the...
There's a good vibe in that place.
Cool
Great
thing
city.
To do.
They also have that farmer's market inside the
ferry building.
Yeah, that's right, yeah. And we always go there. They have all kinds of really cool stuff there.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So did you guys meet up there or did you guys meet here?
We met here. I was living in Santa Barbara.
Right.
Oh, okay.
And we met here, and we started dating. And
actually, our first date was in Carpinteria, just below Santa Barbara.
Oh, right, which is a cool place.
It's a cool little beach town, and that we wound up writing our book there. We wrote the screenplay first for 9 Degrees North,
uh-huh.
and then we wrote the book afterwards, but Carpinteria was just the place where all the inspiration came from, this beautiful little beach town.
Well, we went there a couple summers, and we rented a place for like a month. And we would just write.
Wow.
It was
cool.
Overlooking the ocean, just such inspiration.
Wow.
Very cool.
So that's amazing. And then it turned out that you're both writers and stuff, like you were before you met, right?
We were, but we didn't think about doing it together.
Right, obviously.
She wrote a popular blog. Yeah, she was a blogger.
Oh, okay.
And I come from kind of more entertainment. I've written a few screenplays and directed a few little micro-budget independent movies. But when she told me where she grew up, when she was like 14, 15, 16, on this little island called Kwajalein out in the middle of the Pacific Ocean, I went, wait a second, what? It was like a half mile wide by 3 miles long island, a military island.
Oh, wow.
Where they did nuclear rocket testing. And she started telling me that, you know, this is in 69 and all the kids had just total freedom to go about and do whatever they want. And I said, and she fell in love with a guy. Her first love was like a guy that was older than her.
Yeah.
So it sounded like, you know, kind of like the inverse of Summer of 42. And I said, wow. This would make a great, like a Steven Spielberg movie. You know, and she just kept telling me, the more she told me about it, the more I started going, this is a phenomenal idea for a story.
Wow. You see, that's how stories come about, you know, and that's the amazing thing, you know. It was totally unexpected, and then had you not met her, you wouldn't have thought about
it. Absolutely not. No, there's no way I could have conceived this without Kim.
Right.
Well, he never even heard of the island.
Yeah, no. I don't think anybody has.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever even heard of the island.
How did you end up there?
My father was a civilian. He worked for McDonnell Douglas, and we got transferred out there. So
because of the testing and stuff? I mean,
yeah, he was a test engineer. So they would test rockets, missiles, whatever, from Vandenberg Air Force Base, basically, out here to the island. They would intercept them.
Right.
This is kind of where our Star Wars program became... You know, to be, and they would launch missiles from Vandenberg, and we'd shoot them out of the sky from Kwajalein.
Right.
Oh, wow.
To meet them.
Yeah. And so that's kind of.
And somebody had to do it, I guess. So your father was the one.
Yeah.
And you guys came along.
Yeah.
Wow.
But what was interesting, Sam, is that this island is part of an atoll of a string of islands.
The Marshall Islands.
And one of the islands is Bikini Island, where they named the bathing suit after, Bikini Island.
Oh, really?
Oh, my gosh.
Wow.
Really?
I know, but in the atoll, right?
No.
Nearby.
She doesn't agree. It's not that nearby. Okay.
I'm still learning.
It's okay.
She has to correct me every once in a while.
Yeah, you should let her tell her own
stories. The dynamic
of
our relationship, you know. I try to tell people who I am. She goes, no, that's not who you are.
Yeah, exactly. You guys tell each other about each other. Yeah.
You tell them about Bikini.
Well, no. I mean, I'm just Bikini Island. That's totally different. We're talking about the Bravo test back in 54.
Right.
But right now we were just kind of Kwajalein, the island itself. That didn't have anything to do with, I mean.
Right. I understand.
You know.
I understand. Okay, he's not confusing us that much. So
yeah, it's just in a different atoll, is all.
Yeah, okay.
It's in the island.
So now, how long did you guys live there? I mean, didn't your father think, how long?
Just a few years. You're only there contracted to stay, you know.
Just a few years. I mean, that seems like a long time to be living on a small island, you know, isolated from the world, right?
Yeah, very much. But but as a teenager, you didn't care because...
it was just fun to be there?
Fun.
Wow.
Yeah.
So you lived on a military base, right? You pretty much had everything you needed and stuff. It's not like there's any villages or towns or anything there.
No.
It's very small.
There
were
no cars.
No cars.
No television.
Wow. Yeah. Wow.
No phones.
Right.
Things like that. But you did have a lot of freedom as far as you know, everyone had a bike, and you had the ocean.
Yeah.
You know, the ocean was your playground, and
That's true.
They had beer machines on the golf course.
Really?
That you could go and buy for a quarter. You know, so the teenagers all hung out there after hours. And, you know, there was an outdoor movie theater called the Richardson Theater, and they would get movies late, but we would get them, and you'd take your bike, and you'd just sit on the grass. And so, you know, the kids, I don't think, felt real isolated.
Right.
I mean, we kind of did at times.
That is too cute.
Yeah.
They got movies very late. I think they're just now getting like Butch Cassidy and the Sundance
Kid. Yeah, they're catching up on it.
Yeah, they're a little far behind. Uh-huh. But they actually had a lot of sharks out there too. So they would feed the sharks at one point, one spot on the island, every day, just to keep the sharks away from the public areas where they swam.
That's interesting stuff.
Yeah, I guess it makes sense.
Yeah. So that's a very unique childhood. I mean, not many people go through that. Mm-hmm. So they did like testing there for rockets. It was all kosher and everything. I mean, right? It was probably secret from the public and everything, but it wasn't something they were really doing that's wrong, right?
No, it wasn't. There was nothing wrong, right. I don't think. And again, as a teenager, I could care less what they were doing.
Right.
And that's kind of what happened with our story when we started writing it, because it started out to be just a fun, oh, this is just fun. Let's do a coming-of-age story.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And then Michael and I started doing a lot of research and kind of for ourselves uncovered this whole history that neither one of us were really that aware of.
Oh, wow.
And that was when we were like, wow.
Yeah.
There's a lot of stuff here that people don't know, and we would really love to share it with them.
These right. islands out in the Pacific is where they tested the nuclear bomb after World War II for like a period of like around 12 years.
Really?
They dropped over 65 nuclear bombs out in this area.
What?
Yes, testing the nuclear bomb. In fact, one of the bombs that is kind of focused around in our book was one of the tests was called the Castle Bravo test. And this one bomb,
the largest
one that they dropped on Bikini Island, it was 1,000 times more powerful than the bomb we dropped on Hiroshima.
Wow.
They didn't even know how large it was really going to be. It was much bigger than they actually thought it was going to be. But they thought the wind was going to blow this way, and it actually blew that way. Mm-hmm. And it covered several islands that were inhabited by Marshallese.
Oh, really?
So we go into this in our book, and we talk about this. And these six teenagers who we've kind of told the story through in our book in 1969 are starting to wake up to their surroundings. They've been transplanted on this island. Their history teacher is this cool guy who would have probably been flying his freak flag if he would have been a little younger, but he kind of
explain to the younger audience what a freak flag is.
Yeah, what is it?
You know, he would have been like a hippie if he was, you know, a few years younger. And so he identifies with these kids and kind of befriends them, and they want answers to like stuff that is really not part of the curriculum to be teaching them.
Right.
And it's a very strict military run island. So he starts like hipping them to some of the stuff that went on out there.
Wow.
And they're just teenagers, and they feel, you know, this is during the Vietnam War, and one of the character's brothers is leading the protest at Berkeley. Mm-hmm. And so there's a lot of tumultuous emotion that is dealt with in this book. And, it really is it's a wonderful kind of a stage to stage a story around this whole stuff, because you get young kids identifying, you know, like 14, 15, 16, 17-year-olds identifying with the book from a kid's point of view, but then you get baby boomers going, wow, this is what was going on when I was a kid. So we're lucky in that sense. We have a wide demographic of people that appeals to.
And we became very involved and concerned as we were writing it with the Marshallese people themselves. It overshadowed anything we started out with, which was, you know, these six American kids on this island. It all of a sudden, for both of us, it was like, wow. I mean, because they're still, to this day, enduring a lot of suffering, and they were removed from their homeland, never to return I guess you would call it, I don't know, when they were moved from the islands in the beginning, when they were going to conduct those tests, they were they came to the islands, they said, you know, they presented their case, the Americans, and said, you know, we're doing this in the name of God to end war for all time. Mm. And they couldn't speak English or anything, but they're like,
okay.
So they left their home with the thinking they were coming back in days, and they've never been able to come back.
Really?
No.
Oh, wow.
Some say Bikini Island is off limits for over 30,000 years.
That bad,
gosh.
Huh? Now, how far is that from the land, from the mainland of the United States?
Well, I don't know the exact miles, if I was to say miles, but when you look in the Marshall Islands, this is how I always tell people, if you look at San Francisco,
right,
Japan, and Australia, it's right in the center. It's 9 degrees north of the equator.
Oh, really?
And that's where the title comes
from.
That's
where the title comes
from. Okay, it's like 2,500 miles from anywhere, give or take 1,000 miles. It's really isolated. And the Marshallese people have never been able to go back to their homes. They were just, you know, a lot of them were transplanted to Ebi. Tell them about Ebi.
Well, Ebi is the island right in the Marshall Islands, where you have Kwajalein. I know this is a radio show and you guys can't see my hands, but
that's okay. If you hold them closer to the mic, they'll see.
Yeah. Okay.
So it's like Kwajalein's towards the bottom.
Yeah, so Kwajalein's the larger island. It's the largest island of all this little chain of islands.
Mm-hmm.
And right next door is Ebi, which is smaller than Kwajalein. Kwajalein, as Michael said, is 3 miles long by half mile wide.
Mm-hmm.
Ibai is smaller. So right now they say on Kwajalein there's probably 1,000 people that live there, military and civilian combination.
Mm-hmm.
And on Ibai next door there's about, well, there's 10,500 people living in all those little islands. The majority all live on Ibai. Mm-hmm. So it's one of the most densely populated places in the world.
It's like among the 10 most densely populated places in the world, Ibai is one of them.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
And so there's a lot of passion that went into. We're going to write this little coming of age movie. It was going to be like a summer of 42, you know.
Yeah, like a Stand By Me type of movie.
Exactly. Island girl falls in love with a boy.
Beautiful Hawaiian.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and then we started digging. Uh-huh. And we started going, oh my God, look at what happened. Look at all of this. And I'm 58. I'm going, I've never even heard of Kwajalein, nor did I know all this history about. And the more we wrote, the more we dug up, the more we found out that other people didn't know either.
Mm.
And it really became a think piece.
Wow. Yeah, it's pretty deep stuff, you know, because when you think about it, you're putting a lot of people in danger. And you know, and I'm sure they don't tell anybody that they're doing this stuff, right?
I mean,
as far as the government and all that,
it's not something that they want to advertise,
right?
Mm-hmm.
It's a secret thing, yeah.
Yeah. So now, when they, you know, when they're doing these like bomb testings and everything, isn't there like radiation that's in the area, or do they not?
Yes,
that's exactly the problem.
This was the fallout that occurred to the Marshallese, like I said. During the Bravo test, there was several islands that were affected by the radiation. They were left for a number of days, several days, on the island before they were rescued. And they were brought back a couple of years later and said, the island's fine, everything's clean, and it wasn't. And they brought them all back, and the soil was tainted.
Sorry, can I go ahead. Is an island called Rongelap that we're talking about
this
mainly. It's not Kwajalein itself. It's
these are several islands near Bikini, several hundred miles away.
Okay.
But there were several. One of them was Rongelap specifically that we talk about in the book. And what's interesting here, and it's extremely sad, but it is their culture. In their culture, if you have a deformed childbirth, it means you were unfaithful to your husband. And for years after this testing and the nuclear radiation, these mothers were having these horribly deformed childbirths. And
wow.
I mean, I don't even want to go into it on the radio because it's so shocking and horrifying, but they covered it up because it was associated with shame because of their culture. But it was not, it didn't have anything to do with, you know, disloyalty or, you know, it had to do with radiation.
Yeah. Right.
And so we talk about this, and we bring this up in the book, and the kids find out about this through their history teacher. And actually, their history teacher is based on a real guy named John Smitherman, who was featured in a documentary called Radio Bikini. And he was one of the crewmen on a ship called the Sumner that was actually one of the ships that motored into Ground Zero after one of these big nuclear tests. Have you ever seen old film footage of these nuclear tests, and you see all these ships placed around the explosion, and you see the ships going up the side of the blast?
Mm.
Well, they wanted to see the effects of these blasts, so they put a lot of derelict ships all around Ground Zero.
Loaded them with living animals.
Loaded them with living animals and other atrocities we shouldn't even go into because it would disturb your listeners. But nonetheless, this ship, the Sumner, and many other ships that the Navy had, they went right in there 10 hours after the blast. Mm. And all these crewmen, John Smitherman was one of them, they all boarded the ship with just shorts on, little tennis shoes, walked around these burnt, charred ships and inspected them and swam in the water.
Mm.
Where there was all dead fish floating, and the condensers pulled up the water from the lagoon, and they drank this water.
Mm.
And years later, a lot of these men perished. A lot of these men, and John was one of them, who actually was interviewed in this documentary called Radio Bikini, who talked about the entire experience. And we said, that's going to be who our history teacher is. That's going to be the he has his arm in a sling in our book. And but in real life, this gentleman, he lost both of his legs, and his arm was swollen up. And each one of his legs swollen up to the size of trash cans.
Wow.
And he had to be amputated.
Wow.
And this happened years after. It didn't happen immediately after. It was years after he started feeling these effects. But no one talks about this stuff. And, it's just, it happened gradually. It didn't happen overnight. And, talk about passion. That's why Kim and I have been so passionate about this project.
I just want to say one more thing, though. As heavy as all that is, and it is heavy, and it's eye-opening and disturbing and all that, the book really is more or less kind of a light story of some kids and some fun. And, I mean, wove it all together, where you still get a little bit of a history lesson and maybe, you know, the desire to learn more.
Right.
But young kids can
read this. But it is a novel, right?
Yeah. So it's
absolutely
a nice story, too.
And the screenplay that we originally crafted was really an exciting piece, because we had to use all that music from the 60s, all that protest music and, you know, Buffalo Springfield and you know, War and all these great bands that just, you know, brought so much flavor of that era. Mm-hmm. And in a movie, you can say so much with music. It evokes those emotions that, as baby boomers, that we all felt back then.
Right.
That's cool.
Yeah. Well, that's, you know, I mean, that's very, I think that's the way novels should be written, you know, like to give the essence of the time, of the place, of the smells, of everything, you know. Mm-hmm. So how long ago did you guys write this? When did you decide to start writing this,
the book?
Yeah, we wrote it about a year and a half ago. We published in March of this year, self-published on Amazon.
Oh, wonderful.
The book is available through Amazon.com. It's called 9 Degrees North.
Great.
And it's also available on Kindle.
Right. So it's not just a Kindle. It's definitely a printed book.
A paperback, yes.
Yes. And it's called 9 Degrees North. For those of you who didn't hear earlier, 9 degrees north. Now, you mentioned that's north of the equator. Is that what you were referring to?
Yes, 9 degrees north of the equator is where the island is located. Kwajalein, yes.
Very cool.
Very cool.
Yeah.
It was funny because like 3 or 4 days after we decided to launch into this project, I said, let's open up a Facebook page. I said, Kim, do you still know a few people from Kwajalein? She goes, maybe about 3 or 4. I said, let's just do it anyway. Let's open a page and invite your friends, your 3 or 4 friends to it, and invite them to start telling their stories and anecdotes and whatnot, and tell them that we're writing a book and we're writing a movie. And within a week, we had over 400 people.
Wow.
Oh, my gosh.
That's
pretty
good.
I'll give a shout-out to Sonia Haugen if she's listening in San Diego.
Yeah.
She's the one who grabbed hold of that and got a hold of everyone she knew from Quaj, and all of a sudden we had 400 people.
Wow.
So you've got 400 people
awesome.
Putting their photographs, telling their stories, and then Kim and I were able to go in there and glean, you know, these little anecdotes and these little side stories and imbue them in the book and just, you know, it was such a wonderful process to you know, kind of do it as a collective and it's great.
Yeah, that's very cool. So how do, like, 2 people write? You guys just kind of do your thing and then be like, okay, what do you got? What do you got? Or you guys do everything together step by step?
Well, Kim and I, we respect each other a great deal. And I think that's the first step, is you both have to respect each other's work a great deal. And I write something and she looks at it and she passes it through her filter. She writes something, I look at it, it passes through my filter. And we're incredibly respectful of each other.
That's a fun way to write, you know? I mean, it doesn't feel as lonely as when you're writing alone, huh?
No, we also... What we do, I think, that's a little different is we write the screenplay first.
Okay.
And that we do totally together. Mm-hmm. And we sit and we write that totally together. And then we kind of give each other chapters. Okay, you take the first and write a chapter. And then, like you said, then we'll write and we'll give it to each other. And then we'll change a few things or... So hopefully it comes out sounding like one voice.
Right.
Right now we're writing a romantic comedy called 21 Sunsets.
Uh-huh.
And it focuses on a man and a woman. Mm-hmm. So it's really obvious that she's going to write a lot of the female perspective.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And I'm going to write a lot of the male perspective. And
That's cool.
We do kind of, you know, look at each other's work still, but it really is a completely different thing to write a romantic comedy from.
Yeah, if he tries to say, well, your character should say this or that, I'll say, you don't know what she would say. Just mind your own business and go write your own stuff.
Right. Just back off, Jack.
And that's amazing, though, because, you know, some writers have the ability to do that, you know, and, like, to know how women would... Like Stephen King, for example. I mean, he gets kids, he gets women, he gets everybody. He just... knows, you know, and I think if you, I think you can notice if a man would write something that a woman would say or think and would not be accurate about it, you know, I mean, you would know, wait a minute, the woman would not say that, you know,
right?
But some people are able to do that. But I like the idea of collaborating like this, you know, because
it's wonderful,
it's like,
I love it.
It gives you so many different opportunities, and like you said, you had the backstory. And he came up with the idea of like, yeah, let's make a novel out of this, a screenplay, whatever.
Michael's a fiction work out. Yeah,
of
and he's a storyteller. He's creative. I'm more of a you know, social commentary, very straight.
Right.
So he would, you know, make up these great stories, and even with 9 Degrees North, he started making up all this stuff that was going to happen, and I'm like, no, no, that did not happen out there. No one's going to like this. You're making this up. But he was like, you have to do this, or no one's going to want to read it.
Yeah. So there's no bad guy. It's got to have a bad guy.
It took me a long time to kind of give into that and go, all right, you know what you're doing.
Yeah.
You know.
And then the reviews, a lot of the reviews that we're getting on Amazon are very favorable. People are saying, you know, I love the story. It's you know, you're really, you know, rooting for these high schoolers. And right. I tell you, those kind of reviews just make my day because, you know, if you know, everything comes down to story. Uh-huh. They say the three most important aspects of script writing and storytelling are story, story, and story. And so no one yet has you know, faulted us for the story. We've had a few quadros say, no, the Richardson Theater is not an outdoor, it's not an indoor theater, it's an outdoor theater. We've had a few reviews like that.
Yeah. So. We got a couple of reviews that first stung a bit, but then we're like, oh, whatever.
Yeah. We had to take some liberties to make it a feature-worthy thing, and so.
Yeah. I know. It's just not, because I think the research doesn't end when you do this stuff. At a certain point, you got to say, okay, enough, you know?
Yeah.
And
there's always going to be something.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I mean, if you ever been on the island, Michael?
No, I never have. I would love to go.
Yeah.
I feel like I've lived on the island.
I'm sure, because he told you so much
of it. I've been so immersed in it. And coming up this next year, March 1st, is the 60th anniversary of the Bravo test.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
And so we're hoping to really roll out a lot of marketing and promotion for the book on this anniversary coming up.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And hopefully find maybe other groups or organizations or something that are doing something too to commemorate that date and be part of it, because it is it's a big deal.
Yeah, we'd really like to get with Greenpeace, and we're trying to get a literary agent to help us peddle the screenplay. Mm-hmm. And it's like I said, there's so many vampires and zombies and werewolf things that are just keep getting rehashed over, and so few. There's so few original movies out there that have original stories with characters you care about, and you go home and you talk about them.
Yeah.
And one of our reviews said, you know, read this book, parents, and then take and give it to your kids.
Yeah.
And I just, I stood up and cheered when I read that. I said, yes, that is such an awesome review.
Right.
That's great.
That was like, you know, mission accomplished.
Right. Mm-hmm. There you go. Now, you know what fascinates me is how you create so many characters and give them a personality to each one.
Well,
there's
an answer behind that.
Okay. Now, that's got to be very difficult, because each one, I mean, even when you're two people, but I would imagine when you're one person and you have so many characters in the book, how do you give each one a personality? You know, I mean, that's amazing to me.
I think both of us draw off of real people. I know 9 Degrees North definitely started with me as the main character.
Right.
I mean, based on loosely, very loosely, but based on. And then I kind of told Michael about my best friends on the island. And so there was this girl, this guy, this guy.
Oh, okay.
So that's how we got them. And even with 21 Sunsets, which basically, again, is loosely based on us.
Right.
It's our story, sort of. Uh-huh. The people we involved in it, you know, there's a movie producer, and he drew from a actual producer friend of his that, you know, and then the other, you know, one of the best friends is his best friend. right. who, you know, takes qualities from those people. But I think we draw from real people.
You do. Write, they say, you know, write from what you know.
Right.
And you, you say, well, all right, we've got to create these characters. Well, I know some really interesting people, and so do you, and why don't we just take those people and change the names, protect the innocent, and and continue to embellish.
That's true.
Yeah, and if we had a, if we had a part in there that, that we were doing, you know, on the radio, we would use, you know, Sam and Mia. We'd go, well, you know, Sam and Mia, let's use them.
would, you guys will be in our next book.
Physically take a little bit of you, and and change your names just a little.
And you know what's fun is we sometimes when we get into writing dialogue, which is difficult for me, Kim's better at it than I am, but we actually turn on a little tape recorder, and Kim and I just start talking. We start at playing the characters, but we just start talking and doing the dialogue unrehearsed, just improvising, you know. And we have found so much success in just right off the cuff doing our dialogue and then transcribing it back from the tape recorder. And then, you know, fine-tuning.
Well, we're getting much better. I mean, 9 Degrees North is our first work together.
Yeah.
Right.
So it's, you know, and it's, and we're getting better and better.
It's a young adult. It's really a young adult book. I mean, our writing is getting better, but the young adults seem to be really the ones that are vibing to it. Although we've had a lot of adults, a lot of baby boomers say that this is, it's great for a complete cross section of people, from young kids to baby boomers. And so we're excited. We've got several projects. We've got one called a book I'm doing called In the Shadows of Giants, which is largely about my growing up in my household with my dad. My dad is an old-time cowboy stuntman. He doubled Wayne. He doubled John Wayne in like 6 films.
Whoa. Oh, that's so cool.
And he played Jason Voorhees in Friday the 13th, Part 4, the final chapter.
Really?
So growing
that's
up, that environment was very dysfunctional and weird. So I'm writing a bunch of my childhood crazy stories, and that's a book we're going to self-publish. She's got a dramatic novel, romantic novel, called Letters from York, which is a really...
So you guys have been very productive.
Very productive. We're busy all the time.
Yeah, well,
we're
good with writing, doing what you love.
Busy.
Mm-hmm. Right. Now, Michael, we also discussed the fact that you're in graphics and design and so forth. Tell us a little bit about that.
I'm an illustrator. I used to do courtroom illustration a long time ago and did the Leslie Van Houten retrial from the Manson murders, and I did Saul Mineo's murder trial, and I did the Hillside Strangler. And, and so I developed my drawing chops early on back in the mid-70s. And then I started getting into conventional illustration and movie advertising and logo design. And eventually I started storyboarding for film and directed a couple of micro-budget movies myself. And I really became kind of like a rounded entertainment artist.
Very cool. So you grew up in a kind of a... well, your dad was in the industry, so you kind of like had the passion for it as well.
Yeah. Yes.
Entertainment family.
Yeah, there you go.
It's very cool.
Yeah. So, well, that's cool. I want you guys to check it out. It's bayouth.com, bayouth.com. And you guys can check out some of the illustrations. I mean, he's got like Marlon Brando here that I can't believe how great it is. You know what
I
mean?
Oh, thank you.
Yeah. How long does it take to draw something like that?
That took me over a weekend. I started on a Saturday morning and I finished it Sunday night. And so a couple of concentrated days on a piece like that. Different things take, like oil paintings obviously take a lot longer, but an illustration like that take a couple of days.
Right. So you illustrate this, did you do it on paper or in the computer with a...
No, it's all done outside the computer. It's done on illustration board with paint and pencil and airbrush.
Oh, amazing. So you're still traditional.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the computer is great. It's a great tool. But it doesn't replace traditional illustration.
No, not at
it
all.
It can, and certain things are great, you know, to execute on the computer. But it's nice doing things by hand because they look like it.
Right.
You exactly. know, when you see something that's generated on the computer, you go, oh, yeah, right. that's a Photoshop filter I recognize.
So oh, my gosh, these are awesome. I just pulled it up on my iPad right now. I'm like, I want to see.
Good, yeah.
That's amazing.
Why. Yeah.
And I don't want to actually, I don't want to take all the attention away. Kim's actually a feng shui artist or designer or practitioner.
Okay.
I don't know what
well,
you call
let's
it.
Hear about that, Kim. I mean, you guys have so many things.
And she's got her own website, too.
Okay.
Kim Klein Feng Shui?
Oh, no. Well, I practice Feng Shui. I went to school in San Francisco, mm-hmm. and I graduated and been doing that since 1999.
Yeah.
So I do, you know, consultations, home, you know, residential, commercial, but I also do Feng Shui art, which is something that I put together for
That's
clients.
Beautiful.
What's that, Feng Shui art?
Well, let's see. You have to know a lot, kind of something about feng shui, but I bring in the elements or the colors or the textures and things that go in a certain area, a life area in your home. So I use, you know, lots of different materials from fabrics to paper to chopsticks to buttons to, you know, stones to all kinds of things like that.
That's cool.
Right.
Yeah, so that's fun.
And what's your website?
Well, my website is supposed to be updated by my partner here, which hasn't been done.
She looks at him. He's like, oh, my bad.
But it is kimkleinfengshui.com.
Okay.
So if anybody's interested, they can go to that. It needs to be updated a bit. But so he's very busy.
Yeah, obviously. You guys are very busy. By the way, that's Klein, K-L-E-I-N. So,
yes, like Calvin, if you forget.
Yes, there you go. You even had the same initials. Oh, no, that's Calvin with a C. Sorry. What, you were going to say something?
Oh, no, I was just, so the whole, like, because I don't really know much about the whole, like, feng shui thing. Is that just, like, if you're designing a home, just putting the couch in this area and that area and just having the right feel when you walk in, like, everything's proportionate or?
Sort of.
How does that work?
Well, that's what a lot of people think it is, and I did too when I went to school for it. I thought it was just kind of rearranging my furniture, but that's part of it. There's lots of layers. It's all based on like the I Ching, like the yin yang principle of balance.
Okay. Right.
And so yeah, it is. It's having a good energy flow through your home.
Energy flow. That's the key here, right?
It's
so it's
kind
not
of
just
like
the furniture, but the layout and
they call feng shui sort of like the acupuncture for your environment, as opposed to, you know, it clears up meridians, opens up things. Things work better, and it just creates a lot of opportunity for you.
Wow, that's so interesting.
When we go into a restaurant and we go to sit at a table, she goes, "You don't want to sit there. That's bad feng shui." And I go,
really?
"Oh, okay. How about here?" She goes, "That's better." So
great.
Wow.
So plug the book again. 9 Degrees North. You can get it on Amazon, probably.
Yes, Amazon. Yeah. You can get it paperback or Kindle on Amazon.com. And if you want to see this thing made into a movie, we urge you to leave a 5-star review on Amazon and tell those producers out there that you demand to see this as a movie.
Okay, that's what we'll do, man. That's what we'll do. We got to find the producers first.
Yeah, and we need that literary agent. Boy, without a literary agent, you can't
really
move five feet.
A lot of closed doors.
Wow, really.
A lot of closed doors.
So self-publishing is still difficult. I mean, the mechanics of it is easy, but to promote it, It's still hard work.
Yeah, it's kind of like, you know, writing the book's like being pregnant. It's really no big deal. You can't really, it just does it.
Right.
And then once you have it, you have to raise it.
It's like
a
baby.
And that's really hard.
Yeah.
But Michael, I have to say, he learned how to self-publish. We knew nothing about it from the beginning. And this guy, when he wants to learn something, he just learns it. And so he learned it, and we self-published, and it's been great. And it's a great opportunity. You know, people get a chance now to produce whatever they want on their own.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to wait around. So,
yeah.
But you have to learn it.
It's good for you guys.
Thank you.
We're going to be recording the audio version of the book soon, and that'll be available on Audible.
Give him a little taste of that, Michael.
The dawn broke dim.
Sounds good. Well, Michael and Kim, you guys are a lot of fun.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Congratulations on the book. I know books are like a little baby. You put in so much time into it. Finally, it sees daylight, you know, and that's nice. So congratulations
nice.
To you. Yeah, you know, what the hell, you know. Be a little poetic
that
at the end
of
the show.
Very poetic, Sam. I'm so proud of you.
Thank you very much for having us on the show.
Yeah, we appreciate it. Thank you
And
so
I'm looking
much.
Forward to reading this because I love stuff like that. I really do, you know, so we look forward to that.
I'm excited. This
and,
is fun.
And everybody go out, check out their websites, the book. You have a lot to choose from: feng shui, illustrations.
Oh, yeah. Can I give them our
nuclear bombs?
Our publishing website.
Sure.
It's www.palmavenuepublishing.com.
Okay, and that's your company too?
Yes, that's where we have our North book.
We need another show just for your other projects.
PalmAvenuePublishing.com.
Okay, yes. Thanks.
Thank you so much.
Pleasure. Thank you. Thanks, Mia.
Thanks,
everybody, and we'll see you tomorrow.
You have been listening to Sam in the Morning with Mia, which airs every Monday through Friday from 10 to 11 a.m. Pacific Standard Time. If you have a question for the show, or if you'd like to inquire about sponsorship opportunities, please send an email along to sam@latalkradio.com. Sam in the Morning with Mia is a production of LA Talk Radio, where we say what we want.